The problem with work is hiring is broken.
We're looking for badasses with master's degrees and minimum 5 years experience. How much are we paying? It's a secret.
Weird buzzwords like new job phoria.
Must be able to streamline cross-functionality workflow between vendor spaces on all platforms.
Who are you going to tell that a company and a recruiter ghosted you after hours of interviews? You can't tell anybody. You can't post it on LinkedIn because you can't tell people that you're looking for a job.
Like, was that even a coherent sentence? Like, what does that actually mean? Does anyone know what that actually means?
I just had a job interview, and it was me, the hiring manager, and the other candidate on the same call. We would each answer one by one the same question right in front of each other.
This is Fast Company's The New Way We Work, where we take listeners on a journey through the changing landscape of our work lives and explain exactly what we need to build the future we want. I'm Fast Company Deputy Editor Kathleen Davis. The theme of this season is the problem with work. And one of the fundamental problems with work that all of the other problems with work hinge on is getting hired. Even as the nature of work changes and innovations transform our jobs, the hiring process feels stuck in the same biased, ineffective rut. This is a problem as old as work itself, and while we've made progress at least in the way we think and talk about it, actual change and expanding opportunity is slow going. Too often, when a company finds itself with an open position, they fall back on the same broken methods, mining leadership's narrow professional networks or posting the same ineffective job ads on the same places. So how can we fix a system that's so ingrained in the way companies operate? How can we make hiring less of a nightmare for job seekers? If we could burn the whole thing down and start from scratch, what would a new, more effective hiring process look like? To imagine that world with me is career and leadership development expert Kimberly Brown. She's the founder of Manifest Yourself, a consulting company focused on career development for women and people of color, and the author of the book Next Move, Best Move, Transitioning into a Career You'll Love. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me, Kate. I'm excited to be here.
Before we get too deep, do you have a story from your own career about a painful hiring process or a time where you like personally experienced some of these broken aspects?
Oh, yeah. I think on my side, I think the worst hiring process I had was I felt like the institution just didn't do enough work to be able to bring through a process and probably weren't actually ready to hire for a role. So one of my favorite stories, not a favorite story, because if I'm honest, I still feel the anger boil up in me whenever I tell the story, but I had been interviewing for a role back during my time in higher education. And I thought that I was going to be a shoo-in. I'd already previously worked at the institution. I left. I'd be returning back for a more senior role. I did all the presentations, so multiple rounds of interviews. And anyone who's listening who's in higher education, I joke and say you have to meet the entire free world before you get an offer. You have minimum, I think, at least 5 interviews, some of them panels with 10 people on them. It's really ridiculous. Higher ed, they make you meet everyone. So I'd gone through that process, presented, met the president, all of it. And I got the call and I already knew exactly what I'd wear on my first day at that job. In New York City, I had envisioned the jacket, the boots, it would have been fall. I was so excited. But when I got the call, they said, you know what, if there were 2 roles, we would have loved to hire you. But we just have to go with this other person. They have a little bit more experience than you. So obviously I was devastated. I was like, okay, I didn't know what to do with myself. Then I took myself off the job market because I was like, I can't go through this. This is too much. I'd been interviewing for months. And about a week and a half later, they called me back. And they said, hey, our number one rescinded their acceptance because of something that happened in the process. I think something, one of the policies or something didn't, they wouldn't get reimbursement for something they'd expected. So they're like, would you still be interested? And I was like, well, you know what? It must be fate. It must be for me. You know what? So I went back. We talked salary. We talked coming in to meet the team for a final conversation. But like, you know what? Like, that's it. Like, we're good. We have you. However, did not get anything in writing. So when it came to, they wanted me to do one more roundtable with the current team. But mind you, we talked salary, talked start date, talked everything. then they rescheduled that meeting, I think two or three times. And finally they came back and said, you know what? We're so sorry. We're actually not going to hire for this role at this time. We are going and we're going to just have someone cover for a little bit. And they ended up hiring someone internal who I beat out in the first round of interviews.
Oh,
when
God.
I tell you, I was so devastated, but I feel like companies do, it's not the only time this has happened to me where I've been interviewing. At one time, I remember I interviewed for an organization and they asked me to do a pretty big project. And at that time, I didn't know where I was in the interview process. And I was like, this is going to take me time. I personally, I'm not doing this unless I'm in the final rounds. And since I didn't know, I was like, let me ask. And when I asked them, they said, oh, hold on, let us get back to you. Again, they decided they weren't hiring for the role at that time. So I think this process brings to light, I feel like so many organizations, I understand things happen, I understand things change. But when it happens on the candidate side and you're having all these conversations, it's not only devastating, but some of those companies I would never interview for again. You could pay me four times what I make. No, I don't trust you. You're disorganized. And I think that companies don't necessarily think about what that impact looks like over a long term.
Yeah. Oh my God. As you're telling, I'm angry for you.
I can't hear what I say. It's in my heart.
At every turn, I'm like, that's horrible. Wait, it gets worse.
Yes.
Can you imagine a candidate pulling that kind of, any of those things?
Oh, yeah.
Like what a sour taste that would leave. That candidate has burned so many bridges, made exactly. so many, you know, such a bad impression. But, and then you're exactly right. Now that company, that institution has made such a bad impression. And you will tell that story and anyone you tell that story to will never want to, you know, apply there. Like it's a big reputation thing. But what do you think is broken or isn't working about the way that most companies hire?
So I think, in my opinion, after working in career and leadership development for 10 plus years and then working in corporations doing HR and my firm consulting, I think that companies significantly underinvest in human resources, period. People operations is the place where people put the least amount of investment. They put it together at the absolute last minute, no matter the scale of an organization. So many times the hiring process is broken because they aren't built to scale. And they don't have the resources needed. I've seen organizations who have one recruiter recruiting for a large organization, and they want to have the best hires and have all the time to pipeline and source talent. It just can't happen unless you have the right resources in place. And I think that's many times because they're not investing in human resources the way they do other areas of a company, specifically the places that are probably more revenue generating. I think most companies do tech first, then they do sales or sales then tech, and then people comes at the absolute last minute most of the time when there's already an issue.
I'm nodding vigorously as you're saying that a lot of the investment too of innovation goes to those other departments. Let's talk about that sourcing bit. What are companies getting wrong about the sourcing?
So I feel like they're either doing it or they're not doing it. I think there's either pipeline development or no pipeline development. Companies that are in, I guess, the more enhanced or more mature stages of recruiting, they're always pipelining for talent. They have pipeline requisitions that are up that are, if you are interested in our company, if you're interested in working at marketing here, give us your information. So recruiters are learning to go through this database at all times to find talent in advance of the role. It doesn't matter that the role isn't available now. They already have a database of candidates that they're able to go through so that they have their own essential blue ocean of candidates. So when the role comes up, they're able to match people to the role who've already indicated interest in addition to folks who are coming in. I think sourcing is both proactively identifying talent that is out in the world. It's sourcing through folks who were silver medalists or runners up to jobs who weren't a good fit for that one. Or there's just someone who's a little bit better, but you still love them.
I will tell you, that's how I got this job is I applied for a job that, and they were like, you're not quite a fit for this, but there's this other role that I think you're a fit for.
I've never really talked to a hiring manager who could really wait to have their role filled. They had to go through so many rounds of approval and resourcing and this and that. So when you talk to them, they're like, when do you need this role filled by? Yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Better yet, 2 months ago. Like that's when they needed the role filled. So it shortens the time for hiring because they wanted someone yesterday. So when you're giving recruiters or hiring managers the short amount of time to fill for the role, you cannot get the best talent. But if you've been pipelining and proactively identifying and having conversations with folks to set them up, it shortens the hiring process later, but it takes a little bit more work on the front end, which I think a lot of places may not be sourced to do or may not be ready to do in that way.
And I think that's why a lot of companies then fall back on kind of the lazy and ineffective methods of like, okay, who's in our network? Who do we know?
Exactly.
Let's just do that like shorthand, which is very problematic for a lot of reasons. I don't want to ask the question why people should care about fixing hiring or opening a candidate pool or making hiring more equitable, because we've been explaining the benefits of a more diverse workforce for so many years. So I'm just going to assume that we're all listening here. We all have that understanding.
Yes.
But what I will ask is, what is the impact on companies and employees if they stick to kind of these old broken ways of hiring?
Gosh, I think, like you said, all the studies have been shown about the impact of diversity recruiting, the impact of an inclusive hiring process. I think it operationalizes the organization. It needs to be operationalized the same way every other part of the business. You'd never not do things like this in technology, in your sales organization, in your external communications, all of the things. That would never happen. And hiring needs to be given the same units of measure that other places are given. I also think when it comes to people operations, that this opens you up to lawsuits as well, which is something that I think a lot of people don't think about, especially the larger the organization. Candidates are more and more involved, more interested, are doing more research than they've ever done before. So if you have an inequitable hiring process, that does open you up to lawsuits over time. So the more structured you make your team, your organization, the better your hiring is going to be, and potentially it could save you money if a lawsuit were to occur because you did something that was inequitable in a process.
Yeah, so many more candidates are tuned into this now and will call it out when they see it. The other thing that came up for me is the testing, sample projects, sample, you know, edit tests, other kind of tests. What's your feeling on how companies should approach that? There's been a push to compensate for that sort of work as well, because depending on what it is, sometimes it takes multiple hours, even days, to thoughtfully complete these projects. Is there advice you would give for on the company side as far as like when in the process that should come? Should they compensate for it? How should they communicate that to the candidate?
So there's a few things. I'll speak from the candidate perspective first, because I work on both sides. From the candidate perspective, I'm a big believer that they're going to ask you, outside of quick like matching assessment that can be done really quick, like if you apply to a job on LinkedIn, they generally ask you a few quick questions about your experience, how many times you've done something. There may be a quick little personality assessment. If it takes more than 10 minutes, I don't think it should be done earlier on in the process. It should be very quick, and it shouldn't be giving that person's intellectual property. When I'm coaching individuals, I teach them, if it's real quick like that, like you could just go through it the way you would any job application, it's okay. But if they're really asking for an investment of your work, then we want to do that toward the end of the process. You need to know that you're top two and ideally not two. We want you to know this is worth your time, your effort, your energy. I also instruct my candidates not to give the whole thing away. And that's how I was also coached from my mentors and my sponsors when I was going through interview processes. Like if they want you to teach like a 5-step process of how you'd approach this problem, teach high level, but don't go into all the sub bullet points. I literally would gray out things on my presentation. So I would talk about it, but I wouldn't give it to you. I also made sure they never had a copy of whatever it was, because there are a lot of organizations that have done some distasteful things and they've taken the work, not hired the candidate. Especially when folks are in like graphic design or in certain types of coding, you're really giving all of your intellectual property away, and it's just not fair. I know for me, in that presentation I talked about where that job didn't hire me, rescinded, and all the things, I saw some of the work that was done in that presentation later in the coming months on their website. And I had purposely, I didn't give the whole kitchen caboodle away. That was back in the days pre-COVID, right? So I was interviewing in person. I'd never send my slides or my presentation ahead of time. I always delete it from the computer that they make you use if I can't use my own. And I put it in the trash and then I empty the trash. I'm sure your IT can probably find it, but I at least try and do my due diligence. But things like that still happen. So I think organizations just need to be a bit more cognizant of how much time and how much research are you putting into it? And are there other ways through a structured interview process, almost taking the model of case interviews, which they frequently use for consulting, where you can understand someone's thought process, how they think, before you're asking a candidate to do some type of assessment or project? Because it does take a lot of time. And then when you don't get the job, you are 10 times more upset if you spent hours working on this assignment.
Yeah, for sure. I will think, you know, and I've thought about a lot of this as a hiring manager, and we give edit tests and writing tests. And I will say, when we say like give article ideas, we would never then assign that article idea to somebody else. Write a sample article. You own that. That's your, as you said, that's your intellectual property. If we want to publish it, we're going to pay you.
Yes.
I think another way is I'll use previously edited things and give you the like unedited version and ask you to edit it. So it's exactly. like work that's already been done. I think there's a lot of ways to do that too, as you're saying, to respect the candidate's intellectual property and their time and the amount of work that you're asking somebody to do, compensating them, even if it's a couple hundred dollars, is well worth it.
100%. And if you wait until the candidate is amazing and you know you want them, then there shouldn't be a problem doing it because you're going to be paying them a full salary anyways.
Exactly.
I think if companies had that in the back of their mind, it would be A-okay.
You focus on helping women of color advance in their careers and helping companies kind of diversify their recruitment efforts. What is the biggest hurdle or kind of biggest frustration or complaint on both the candidate side and the company side when it comes to that?
So I think candidates always feel like they're in the dark. I think that's the biggest complaint, that they have no idea where they are in the process, no idea how many interviews are going to happen. And it just seems like this abyss. I was joking the other day with a friend about when you applied to jobs and 3, 4, 5, 6 months later, you get a, hey, so sorry, we went with someone else. And you're like, why did you even send me this? Like, this is 6 months later. Like, thank goodness I wasn't still looking. Like, you really thought this would be helpful? Like, that always happens with when you apply to a good amount of jobs when I'm coaching folks. It comes out months later. And there's this ambiguity that happens in the process that just doesn't feel good. Causes a lot of anxiety, a lot of mistrust in the organization. And I think on the company side, they're just not resourced appropriately to even have a strict process. When I'm working with an organization, we have 3 main phases that we work on. So we work on phase 1, which is like the pipelining of how are you developing your pipeline? How are you creating a unbiased job posting? And how is the candidate application process? We do step 2, which is screening. And that's like the human resources screen, the leader screening, and then the actual interview process to make sure they're going through a structured process from end to end. Then last but not least, we work on the offer phase, which is offer extended, offer declined, or offer accepted. Because all of those areas, I think many times we just focus on offer accepted, but we don't think about how can we create an exit process for those who we decline an offer and those who decline us. So if the offer was extended, but then they decline, and how you can use the process full cycle to continuously be recruiting and pipelining. Because ideally, if offer declined, if someone was still really good, they should be put in your silver medalist to go back into pipeline development. Offer extended and declined is a really good place to get feedback, because they're still engaged with the organization. They got to the offer stage, and we should be collecting feedback from them on how we can improve things all around. But I think more process on one side and lack of communication on the other side. I recently was working with someone who got an offer extended, but it was dramatically lower than what the industry was paying. All of their other peers in the industry were paying at least 20 to 30K more for that level of role. So I was like, there's no way I'm accepting this. And again, I was like, share that feedback. If you're still really interested, share that feedback with the organization. And the organization said, okay, like we appreciate that. At this time, we can't really come up. And I told them, I was like, let's just watch. Because any candidate who's been doing their research, they're going to have the same issue with their runner-up and with their person after that. They're only going to get someone inexperienced and who wasn't doing research to say yes to this offer. And lo and behold, 2 weeks later, they came back again and said, hey, so if we were to make it this and this, would you say yes? And my person, very luckily, they already had another job offer. So they were like, sorry, I accepted someplace else, but I would love to keep you in mind for future things. And it kind of creates that like that atmosphere of like, okay, if something like this opens in the future, we can do it again. But it's such a great place to get feedback. And I think with technology now, there's so many ways we can collaborate and talk to the candidate in ways that aren't too much stress on the recruiter. Where if you know you're looking at resumes and you know someone is not a fit, there's ways to tag them all, select them, and immediately decline them. So there's some folks who are just aren't a fit when you look at their application. There's folks who are middle of the road, and you could send out automated messages like, hey, we're still looking at candidates at this time. We would love to get back to you. Because when we're thinking about that screening part of the process I shared, the pipeline screening and offer, in the screening process, the recruiter should be putting together their list of candidates who they want to share with a leader. Like, okay, these are the folks we think one of these should be a good fit. Then the leader has to approve that and decide who to reach out to. And then you go into the interview phases. At all of these phases, there could be some type of communication that goes out to kind of soothe the candidates and create an experience that works better for everyone.
So I want to do something a little different now. I want to pretend that we're hiring for a role. As I said at the top of the show, we're going to burn it all down, all the old ways of doing things. We're going to start totally fresh. Let's pretend we are not strapped for resources and time, but we do want to fill the role as quickly as possible. We want to make sure that we find the right person, obviously, who will be happy in the role for a long time and be the biggest kind of benefit to the company and the team. For this role, I'll say that it's a middle manager. People tend to stay only like a year or two and move on. The people who've held the role in the past have all been white men who've had similar education and experience.
Got it. So first and foremost, whenever I'm working with recruiters, we always ask them to do a strategy discussion with the hiring manager. Every organization calls it differently, but the strategy session essentially gets down to the core of what the job is. What are the skills that make this person successful? What are the behaviors you want to see? And crafting a really good job description that ideally removes bias. And you can use amazing tools. Like I know Eightfold has something like this, where it helps remove some of the keywords that either lean too masculine, too feminine, et cetera, and really make sure that it's an unbiased job description that speaks to the skills that that person needs to have. I think next, I know they've said that in the past, they've hired the same profile of individual. But I would probably go back and look through some of those interview processes if there's any data on who interviewed in the past, since it seems like a role that's turning over fast. Who were any of our silver medalists? Are there any silver medalists there who would be a good fit? And see if there's anyone there who we can invite to apply to the role. I would, if we want a different feel, I love referrals too. I love organizations that have really good referral programs. So reaching out obviously to anyone who's currently on the team, even though it's more homogeneous, and just stressing like, you know, we're looking to mix things up a little bit, but give us your best candidates who you think would be a great fit for this role. Reaching out to any of the employee resource groups and asking for referrals as well. And then there, I'm a big believer in a lot of the organizations. Like I know I used to use Jobwell back in the day, The Mom Project, Fairy Job Boss. There's so many organizations that can help you target a different market and just gain more exposure for the role to build that pipeline. Once the role is posted, I always do internal and external. Make sure it's posted to the internal audience and there's some marketing around that, because there could be someone great internal who can start faster, and external as well. But make sure that we're giving it at least 14 days to be out and collect everything. And I think this is where a lot of folks sometimes start to go wrong, because they give it 14 days, but they started interviewing folks at like 3 and 4 days. So the folks who applied at like 7 through 14 never get looked at, but give folks time. If time isn't an option, let it be open for 14 days. Make sure that you're tagging all the sources as they're coming in, hopefully using unique links. A lot of organizations have, a lot of the tech have things similar to like Bitly, but it's the greenhouse version of it, where you can see, okay, we got this many applications from the Mom Project, this many from Jobwell, et cetera. When they're coming into the screening process, I would tell the recruiter that we want a diverse candidate slate of 5 to 7 candidates, meaning that we want folks from different backgrounds, different educational backgrounds, different workplace backgrounds, different experiences. Like, let's make sure that we don't have too many folks who look the same. So if we've had all white men from Ivies, yes, maybe we can have 2 of those on the slate, but let's see if we can have some other folks mixed up. Give those to the hiring leader and give them the opportunity to say yay or nay, and then move them through a structured interview process. And ideally, in that recruitment strategy discussion in the beginning, I would recommend outlining what the process will look like for this role so that we're not just guessing.
And when you say outlining what the process will look like, both, is that for both internally and for the candidate? I mean, you know, we talked earlier about like, should the candidate know this is what the interview process will look like? Also, I guess, you know, kind of what's an ideal, you know, you spoke earlier about you had all of these interviews with all of these people. What's too much? I mean, you can err on the side of too much or too little. What's just right for kind of a middle management role, for example?
I think three interviews is really good. And if we take out the phone screen, having 3 solid interviews, I think is really good. I don't think we need much more than 3. I think because the HR screen, that first phone call when the recruiter talks to you, they kind of verify your background, make sure everything is the same. And a lot of candidates don't know, but most of the time they're doing that to make sure you can get through background verification on the end, make sure all the dates and everything is okay, make sure they're able to have a good conversation with you. That interview isn't really more than 15 minutes, so I don't count that. But 3 solid interviews, ideally where you have one-on-one time with the manager. Generally, that's the final interview. You have time with your peers or any person who you'd be working with cross-functionally. And then there's any other special person who needs to be in there. And ideally, double folks up if needed. Like, you can have interviews with your peers and other key stakeholders at the same time. I like interviews that have all of the perspectives. So we want folks for a middle manager. We want folks who may be reporting to you or who are at lower levels. We want folks on your level, and we want folks more senior to you so that you as a candidate get to also see the full range of the organization and ask questions. But at each phase, when you're thinking about a structured interview process, it should be the same for everyone. So everyone's getting an HR screen. Everyone's getting panel one with their peers and folks at less senior roles. And everyone's getting an interview with folks who are the same level and more senior. Like whatever it is, make sure everybody has the same process and the same questions so that you're able to evaluate everyone equitably.
All of that makes a lot of sense. What's a number? You know, you said you had a panel with like 10 people on it. I think probably the most, you know, I've been involved in is maybe 3 people on the other side of the table. What's a good number and what's a don't go over this number?
I think 3 to 5 is fine. 3 to 5 is fine. I think really think as an institution on the company side, really think who is the best person to be interviewing this candidate? Whose feedback do you actually want? I've interviewed before in front of an entire team. And yes, I'd be interfacing with the entire team the whole time, but whose feedback were you actually listening to? I know you weren't reading all. I think that interview with maybe 13 or so folks who were in that room. A, it's super intimidating to the candidate. But, you know, sometimes that's a good thing to test if it's a role where you're interfacing with a lot of people or presenting a lot. So I can see that. But think about what is the amount of feedback that you're actually able to synthesize and use. So who are the people who can give you that feedback and try and narrow it down to that.
And let's go to the kind of the offer phase and also the salary phase. What is your feeling on salary transparency and posting the salaries for the role, making those offers and making the salary offer? Because there's so much room for negotiation, and somebody who's better at negotiation gets $50,000 more than the person who's not so great at negotiation. How do you handle the decision making? You know, if you have all of those different people involved in the interview process, how do you come to the decision? And then how do you handle the salary and the offer?
So I think the salary should be discussed during that recruitment strategy discussion in the beginning. So you know, in organizations that have are mature in their hiring model, each role should be within a certain range. So you know in this role, this is your budget for all of your analysts, all of your managers, all of your directors, your associate directors, whatever it is, you should know what the range is. I love the salary transparency, but I also think that it's bitten some folks in the behind because why are you saying that your role is between $125,000 and $300,000? That tells me nothing.
Yeah.
Literally nothing. I think putting a $20,000 range is a little bit more reasonable. Because, you know, commensurate with experience, someone who's worked at a direct competitor, has done the exact work before, should most likely be getting paid a little bit more. They'll start faster than someone who this is really their next logical step, but they haven't touched on any of that work. But you want folks, you want to make sure that you're not hiring one director at 120 and another director at 200, because that's where it's like unequitable. So I think the recruitment strategy discussion, you should be really in line with what the salary should be. And that should be a question that happens during that HR screen, during that initial phone meeting. You should be asking about salary expectations for the role. The recruiter should be empowered to share what the range is and not let it be a ridiculous range, because we teach candidates. I went through a salary negotiation training years ago with the American Association of University Women. You don't want anyone giving a salary range that's more than 10 to 15K. So I believe recruiters should be held to a very similar standard. And you could also say like plus bonus and blah, 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 blah. But they should be able to quote a range that's reasonable so that both parties can agree before the process goes on. Because a candidate doesn't want to go through a process. And when the offer is extended, you're like, I thought this role was paying 160, not 120, or vice versa with the organization. That's never a good feeling.
Makes a lot of sense to get that done at the beginning part, because you're right. Then it's a waste of everybody's time if you get through, make an offer, and it's wildly doesn't line up. How should the decision process then work?
Generally, there should be a good rubric for each question so you're able to rate the candidate. So again, for mature organizations, if you have a nice rating scale, so if you're asking the same questions, you can rate the answer for each question and give each candidate an actual rating. So then at the end, when you have these 5 to 7 candidates, generally that slate, if the recruiter is bringing 5 to 7 candidates, you may interview like the top 5. You don't have to actually do the whole 7. If you're interviewing 3 to 5, that's generally pretty good at minimum. You should be able to rate those candidates based upon the rubric and how they answer the questions fairly logically. And I love when organizations allow folks to rate them on their own, by themselves, and they turn it in to the recruiter, and then they have a discussion. Because what happens many times, what I talk about with a lot of my organizations in consulting, is a little bit of groupthink happens, And when you have everybody in the room discussing the candidate, generally people, especially the person who is hiring the person or the most senior person in the room, will greatly influence everyone versus if people are by themselves doing the rubric, turning it in, and then you have a discussion, that's the best way to do it. Because I do still think that everybody, the opinion is still warranted. So maybe you end up going with the person who was rated 2 instead of number 1, but it's because someone had an interaction that influenced that made a lot of sense. Like, you know what? I know they weren't rated this way because they were maybe a little less prepared, but this directly relates to what we need. And this makes more sense. And then the group can make that consensus and move forward with that candidate.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I will say that we just kind of stepped into a fantasy world a little bit where we totally remade things. But back in the real world where change is slow, what parts of the traditional hiring do you think we should ditch completely? Like, where can people start? What can they kind of get rid of first?
So number one, I just want to say, you don't have to overhaul everything at the same time. I'm a huge believer in pilot programs. Find the leader in your organization who is the most excited about doing this and start to pilot in that segment of the organization and slowly roll out to other parts. It doesn't have to be. I think a lot of organizations are like, I can't do it because I can't do it. We have 25 roles open right now. There's no way we can stop this. No, that's not what we're asking. Find a small segment and maybe you do it with 2 to 3 roles and use each phase. So first you want to work on pipelining. Then do you want to work on like the interview phase? And then you want to work on the offers. But I think number one, the first thing I would say is use the data that you already have. Most organizations, I hope, who are listening to this are not just recruiting out of a Google form. You have a system. What are the capabilities of that system and how can you use that data to better inform your process and understand existing patterns and biases that are happening in that funnel and use it to make small tweaks over time? I think the fastest way that someone can shorten the hiring time is by identifying silver medalists and proper pipelining. But we don't give recruiters enough time. So I'd say use your data and give your recruiters time. Stop telling them that this role needs to be hired in 7 days from the role being up to you closing it. Give them a little time and that will give them more time to pipeline and do all those things. And slowly but surely, you can start biting off some of the other chunks. I know the structured interview process is a lot. I know that takes a lot of time and a lot of education. When I work with organizations, we're doing trainings for everyone to slowly roll this out. It's not something that is overnight.
That makes sense. And the pipelining, the silver medalist, I think is really great because that is the, you're helping yourself for the future.
Yes. And the same way you said you got your job. I know I interviewed for Google in 2016. And that role ended up not being the best fit for me. I also wasn't interested in moving to Austin, Texas at the time. But that recruiter kept in touch with me for at least 2 years, at least, just reaching out, seeing how things were, what was happening. There's so many automated technologies. I felt like it was personal because it came right to my Gmail account. I didn't see an unsubscribe at the bottom. Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. But there's so many ways for organizations just to keep tabs on really great talent. And remember that recruiting is like, you are always recruiting. It's not just when a role is open. We need to have like an always identifying talent, always thinking of things. When you're at conferences, one of the organizations I used to work for back in the day, when we used to go to conferences, we would always be having soft conversations about potential roles. We would have a conversation before we went and said, okay, well, we know we're probably hiring for this associate director, this assistant director, maybe this counselor in like the next 6 months. When we go, let's go ahead and just keep that in mind. And then we'd end up doing like mini coffee chats on the side. And if someone was really good, we'd grab our director or grab the most senior person there. Can you just meet with them real quick and do a quick coffee so that we already had folks who had a good experience with the organization so that when a role did open, the team was able to reach back out and be like, hey, this role just opened. We loved meeting you at this conference. Would you be interested in applying? We'd love to have you on the team. It's this always recruiting mentality that is super helpful. And I think that when you see really great leaders and they come into organizations, many times, I don't want to say they clean house, but a little bit. But for very senior roles, that process takes a while in order to bring a very senior leader into an organization. They've had so many conversations with the current CEO, the current person in their role, that they've had time to essentially decide what they're going to do in their first 90 to probably 6 to 12 months in that role. They are slowly but surely pipelining folks to bring with them. And that's some of the best leaders in the world have been able to make significant impact really fast because they're pipelining. Most really great leaders are amazing at pipelining talent because they want to come in and make a difference as fast as possible. And to do that, you need great team.
Yeah. I'm going to coin that, you know, the ABC always be closing. I'll say ABR always be recruiting.
Yes.
Like, you know, sounds really old school now, like keeping your Rolodex filming, you know, like, and looking in unexpected places too, I think too, not, you know, the same exact, we worked together at this place before, so now we'll work together again. Yeah.
All the old things are coming back. Bell bottoms are coming back. I saw like four people wearing them this weekend.
Yeah.
So if bell bottoms can come back, some of these things can come back too.
Can come back. Yeah. Yes. Flip phones, landlines, all of it. On the candidate side, what advice do you have if they are frustrated with the process and the company is unfortunately kind of doing all of the things they shouldn't do? They're taking too long to get back to you. They're asking you to, you know, do too many tests, you're interviewing with too many people, all of the kind of broken things that we've talked about on the candidate side. What can you do if you're encountering those?
Gosh, so this is going to be a very unpopular answer for the company. So they can kind of pause or put me on mute for a moment. But I tell the candidates to leave, like exit the process. If there is mess in the beginning, it's probably going to be 10 times messier once you get there. I have very rarely had a process myself or with the hundreds of thousands of folks I've coached and worked with who have had a very messy intake process, applicant process, and then they've transitioned and it's been blissful. Those red flags generally perpetuate in the role. I think the one thing the candidate can do, so we're thinking about the job search strategy, number one, make sure that you are applying to the roles that are a best fit for you. I think sometimes candidates don't hear back because they could be applying too high or too low. And if you're unsure, I recommend kind of making sure that you're applying to a good amount of roles, like do 5, 5, and 5. Where are you getting called back? Was it the manager level? Was it associate director or director level? Which one are you getting the most hits? And then let's triple down on the one you're getting the most hits for. Because I totally understand that candidate job titles are all over the place. People just make them up nowadays. So it may take you a second to get that right. Make sure that you are networking appropriately and getting insider information so you can learn a little bit more about the organization before getting into a process, if possible. And then do not be afraid to follow up. So whenever you are having a conversation with someone, do your best to try and get their email that you can follow up directly with the recruiter and or the hiring manager. Be empowered to ask the same way I did in that role. Like, can you let, before I do this assignment that's going to take a good amount of time, would you be able to tell me where I am in the process in your HR screen? Can you tell me a little bit about what this hiring process looks like at your organization? How many interviews are there? Like, you can ask many of these questions, be empowered to ask, because with the information, then you can make decisions and you know whether this is a red flag or whether this is how the organization works. And ultimately, is it going to work for you?
Yeah. If the hiring process is a hot mess, like the company's going to be a hot mess. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, Kimberly, thank you so much for all of this. I think there's, you know, again, like if people can't overhaul the entire process, of course, I kind of want to burn it all down and start again. But if they can't, I think these are some really helpful places to start.
Thank you so much. I really appreciated this conversation.
And that's all for this episode. If you're a new listener, be sure to subscribe to The New Way We Work wherever you listen. And if you like this episode, leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. And we want to hear from you. Work is changing every day. What's the most pressing issue on your mind? Email us at podcast@fastcompany.com. The New Way We Work is produced by Julia Hsu, Avery Miles, Blake Odom, and Joshua Christensen, with editing by Nicholas Torres.